start out with our motivation so we can easily see in our world that so many problems and so much tumult happens due to people not being conscientious about their ethical conduct. So we see this in the public and political sphere, the way people talk to each other. We see it in the religious sphere, the breaches of ethical conduct. We see it in our own lives, our laziness, our excuses for not keeping our precepts well, or not simply restraining our body, speech, and mind from doing generally destructive actions. And how much this disturbs the lives of others who are immediately around us, disturbs the lives of citizens in a country, disturbs the peace on the planet. So ethical conduct is based on the determination to not cause harm to ourselves or to others. And really, before we go on to very advanced practices, we need to spend some time on this. And even after we've spent some time and modified our gross misdeeds, to keep being very conscientious about our ethical conduct, and to do it with a motivation to benefit self and others. And to use ethical conduct of the Pratimoksha precepts, the five lay precepts, the monastic precepts, the bodhisattva precepts, the tantric precepts and commitments, to see that following these are really essential for us to progress on the path. And so to make a very strong determination to go in this way for the benefit of self and others, and to use that as a basis upon which to build all the other realizations that will lead us to Buddhahood. So let's keep that as our motivation today. So, it's been 3 weeks, and I have us talking about what the four elements are. Is that, where do you have us being? Because I'm not sure that where I have us being is correct.
In the next sounds, some physical forms.
Yeah, I didn't think we had gotten that far. So we're on sounds, huh? Okay, yeah, because sometimes this jumps ahead. Okay, sounds. So we're talking about the divisions of phenomena, and, you know, the first division into product or impermanent and permanent, and then the division of impermanent phenomena into form and mind or consciousness and abstract phenomena. And then we've been dealing with the one about form and its divisions into the objects of the five senses. So physical, visible forms, you know, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile sensations. So we talked about visible forms already, and that they're the two main things that the eye faculty perceives are color and shape. Okay? And I still have that question about shape. Yeah. And I have another question too, because we're learning this way of looking at things. And it is based on another kind of worldview that from a society that didn't have modern science. Yeah. And so it's good to learn this, because when we get into the tenet systems and people are refuting the positions of the lower schools, then at least we'll know what the lower schools' positions are. So, for example, when they talk about partless particles and so on, we'll have some idea what those are. But I also wonder how it would be to develop a classification of, especially here, matter or form, based on the scientific version and what that would look like and how that would influence refutations happening in the different tenet systems and so on. So it's something maybe keep in mind and we can play with as we go along and see how we can develop a Western one, yeah, based on the elemental chart and scientific notions of atoms and molecules and so on and so forth. You getting what I'm saying? Yeah. So something that corresponds more to our culture. But anyway, okay, here we're talking about sounds. So again, when we talked about this visible objects and color and so forth, color is not seen as light rays that are hitting an object and some are absorbing and some being reflected, and that's how you see what the color is. That's not how they look at it. Okay, there's color is a derivative of the four elements, so it's kind of included in the molecular structure. Okay, so sound, similarly, there's no idea of it being waves, sound waves. Yeah, so the second of the five types of external form is sound. In this system, they consider sound itself to be form, rather than a non-substantial wave moving through a medium like air or water. So, the whole idea of what sound is really very, very different. As a form, it is thought to be atomically established, though in a different, more ephemeral way than ordinary matter. Okay, so it's atomically established. It's made of atoms, but not quite, or atoms, it's made of particles, but not quite in the same way as, let's say, the color is made of particles, because sound arises and ceases so quickly. So a sound is defined as an object of hearing. If it wasn't defined that way, then I don't know what. Mutually inclusive with sound is sound source, which is defined as an object of hearing of an ear consciousness. Now, usually when they talk about the sound sources, the six sources, or sometimes they do 12 sources. So there's six sources that are the objects and then six which are the faculties. So here it's talking about the object. That is the sound source that is the object. Okay, so this system has a very interesting way of dividing sounds into eight types, beginning with pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Okay, so whether or not something is pleasant is a matter of taste, east and west, and even from one person to the next person. Okay, but sounds are pleasant when they appeal to the listener and are attractive, And sounds are unpleasant when they do not appeal to the listener and are unattractive. But of course, that really varies from person to person, doesn't it? I mean, in terms of music, for example, or people, the sound of people's voices, or, you know, all sorts of different sounds. Some people say, oh, those are so attractive, and others say, bleh. Okay, articulate means that the sound indicates meaning or reveals meaning. Okay, so it's trying to express something. It is an expressive sound. Of course, any sensible utterance is an example of articulate sound, such as the sound expressing sound is an impermanent phenomena, or even the sound, uh-huh, or the sound, Okay, so all of these, whether they're words or not, can express a meaning. Even if it is spoken in a language you do not understand, it may be articulate. For example, it would seem that the sound of a cat purring or the yelp of a dog after you step on a paw would also be articulate, as these are sounds that express meaning. Yep. Okay, so the last part of the first of the eight types of sound specifies those sounds caused by the elements conjoined by consciousness. So here, when it was talking about dividing sounds into eight types, beginning with pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Okay, so we just talked about pleasant, we talked about articulate, now we're talking about caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Okay, so what that means is the four substantial elements in this ancient system are earth, water, fire, and wind. Sounds are not an element, but are caused by the play of the elements, in the same way that colors or shapes or tastes are caused by the play of the elements. And that's why these things are called derivative form. They're deriving from the elements. Now, when we look around, we can see that some bits of matter, like your hand, are animate, and others, like a rock, are not. Okay, that means that your hand, for instance, is conjoined with consciousness and moves by your will. Thus, some elements are conjoined with consciousness and some are not, or at least that seems to be the case. Okay, so when we're talking about joined to consciousness, it means that somebody has conscious control over it. Or maybe they don't have conscious control over it. That may be included too. In regards to sounds, a person's tongue is conjoined with consciousness because it is an internal form, a form held within that person's continuum of consciousness. So that's what internal form means, a form that's conjoined with somebody's mental continuum. Thus, the sound of that person's voice, when you hear it directly and immediately, is a sound caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Okay, is that clear? You understand what it means? Yeah, I'm not hearing anything else, so I'm assuming you're okay. However, if that person's voice is conveyed indirectly, like over a telephone or from a recording, the sound you are hearing arises from elements not conjoined with consciousness. Well, how about half conjoined with consciousness and half not? Because they are, that sound wouldn't exist if a person didn't make it. Yeah. On the other hand, you're not hearing it directly, so you're hearing it by means of an inanimate object, like a telephone or a computer or a recorder. So in that way, it's not conjoined with consciousness. So it seems he's putting it totally in the not conjoined with consciousness box. But I wonder, it seems a little bit half and half. But they don't like half and half. You have to either be one or the other. Okay. So, okay. Of course, when you talk with someone on the phone, you can recognize the person's voice, and that voice is caused by the person's vocal cords and so forth. But what you actually hear on the phone is a reproduction of that person's voice accomplished by inanimate matter. Is the voice actually getting reproduced, or is the voice just getting conveyed and transmitted through a telephone? Anybody know?
Electrical impulses that are making a speaker move.
Yes, it all through electrical impulses that the sound gets transformed into something else and then gets transformed back into sound at the end. Or is it? Yeah, I don't know how it works. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's the telephone making the sound. Makes the sound. Okay. So then it makes you wonder, does the sound cease when it goes into the telephone? The sound ceases, and then it's conveyed through electrical impulses or whatever, and then the telephone creates the sound again. So then that's weird, isn't it? We're listening to somebody's voice, and we're taking it as if they're really saying it, when actually it's just a speaker vibrating.
It's always just our eardrum vibrating anyway.
Yeah. So, does the sound have meaning? Is a speaker making an articulate sound? Okay, because it's saying here, you know, it's an attractive sound that is articulate, and it's caused by elements. So, here it's conjoined with consciousness, but this would be one not conjoined with consciousness. So then would all of the sounds that are not conjoined with consciousness be articulate or not? But it'll be interesting to see. I bet you that's one of the categories. We'll see. Are they getting articulate sounds? No, because their computer is making the sound, and the computer is not adjoined with consciousness.
But it's articulate, not adjoined with consciousness, because being articulate, it conveys meaning.
Yeah, but okay. But is there... Here's one of the eight divisions later. Pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness, like the sound recording of a person teaching compassion. That looks like it would be a good example, but I'm saying, is that actually articulate?
It conveys
meaning, but... When we were talking about it, so your hand, it means conjoined with consciousness that moves by your will.
That's not articulate.
There's three divisions. There's pleasant, articulate, inarticulate, and caused by elements.
Not caused by, okay, but there's... Let's continue reading, and then we'll go through his examples, okay? In regards to sound, a person's tongue is conjoined with consciousness because it is an internal form, a form held within that person's continuum of consciousness. Thus, the sound of that person's voice, when you hear it directly and immediately, is a sound caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Okay. However, if that person's voice is conveyed indirectly, like over a telephone or from a recording, the sound you are hearing arises from the elements not conjoined with consciousness. Of course, when you talk to somebody on the phone, you can recognize the person's voice, and that voice is caused by the person's vocal cords and so on. But what you actually hear on the phone is a reproduction of that person's voice accomplished by inanimate matter. A more obvious example of a sound caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness is the sound of a water or of the sound of thunder. Okay, that we can handle. By combining the three pairs of pleasant and unpleasant, articulate and inarticulate, and caused by elements conjoined with consciousness, and caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness, since 2 cubed is 8, there are division of sounds into 8 types. Okay, so pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements conjoined with consciousness, like the excellent words conveying the meaning of the Buddhist doctrine to somebody whom the Buddhist doctrine appeals. Yeah, you have to, yeah. Unpleasant articulate sounds caused by elements conjoined with consciousness, like the sound of harsh, angry words. But I wonder if somebody might like the sound of harsh, angry words. If you're mad at somebody and you hear somebody else tell that person off, maybe you like the sound of harsh, angry words. Yeah? Pleasant, inarticulate sounds caused by elements conjoined with consciousness, like depending on the circumstances to settle whether or not it is pleasant. Yeah. Okay. The sound of snapping fingers, the sound of applauding hands, or the sound of Ella Fitzgerald scat singing. What is scat singing?
Just doing vowels on pitches.
Okay. So that's pleasant, inarticulate sounds. Yeah, okay, maybe they consider it pleasant. Is it inarticulate, or do you think it's expressing a meaning?
I think clapping can be expressing a meaning.
Yeah.
Snapping your fingers, and depending on the emotion she's putting into the scat singing, that might also be conveying meaning, and that might be...
Yeah, I would think so, and I think clapping conveys a meaning. Yeah, in Tibet, you do it to scare away the spirits. Yeah, in the West, you do it to show your approval.
Does that not show it?
No, just that the meaning can be very different according to the culture. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to say. Okay. So I don't know. What's another example of a pleasant, inarticulate sound caused by elements conjoined with consciousness? How about the sound of a breeze?
That's not
oh, that's right. Okay.
Sound of a child sleeping to a parent.
Okay, the sound, yeah.
Cat purring. But that might be convenient.
No, I would say that's a pleasant articulate sound. Is a cat purring. Yeah. Okay, so maybe the sound of your child breathing to a parent who wants their kid to go to sleep. Okay.
Scratching your fingernails on a wall.
That's not pleasant. Okay, the next one, unpleasant, inarticulate sounds caused by elements conjoined with consciousness, like the sound of a fist hitting you. Or, you know, the sound of nails. Yeah. Or snoring when you're trying to sleep. Yep. Okay. Then pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness, like the sound recording of a person teaching compassion. If it's not conjoined with consciousness, can the sound be articulate? Can it express meaning?
He's going into recordings, and I wonder what would be the traditional example of this.
Yeah. Okay, so let's try and think of one. Pleasant, articulate, caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness.
Sound of an echo.
Yeah, I was just going to say an echo.
Sound of an echo. But isn't that isn't it caused by elements conjoined with consciousness? Because there it's just bouncing back. The sound waves are bouncing back with an echo. But the sound is, why not? I mean, they all use it as an example, but it seems to me an echo is, it's you're hearing the person's voice. It's just that the sound waves go there and then bounce back. It's not something else creating the sound.
Smoke signals indicating treating the sound.
Okay. Pleasant, articulate, caused by elements not conjoined by consciousness. Okay.
But not a sound.
That's not
a
sound.
It's not a sound, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But the distinction that he seemed to make before was that direct and indirect. So when I say hello, you hear it directly, but the echo of hello back is indirect, which means then it's not conjoined with consciousness because it's not completely direct from just me to you. It's got something else involved that's mediating how it's coming to you. So that way it's, that seems to be from before.
Yeah, that seems to be what they're saying, like the cave is making the sound. But I don't think the cave is making the sound. I think if, scientifically, the cave's not making it. It's just the sound waves are bouncing back.
How about the sound of an instrument being played by somebody?
Okay, pleasant, articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Okay, so the sound of...
like a conch shell.
Uh-huh.
Or a flute is being caused by the wind element, but it's not, and it's articulate, it can convey a feeling, mm-hmm. but it's not conjoined with consciousness because the flute is not conscious.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a difference between the wind, let's say the wind ringing some chimes, and a person ringing the chimes. If a person rings the chimes, is it caused by consciousness or not caused by consciousness?
There's a footnote about that very thing.
Oh, what does it say?
It says, Gendun Drupa lists the sound of a tabor, or however you say that, a small drum, as a pleasant inarticulate sound caused by elements conjoined with consciousness.
Okay.
And gives the sound of a gong as a pleasant inarticulate sound caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness.
Oh, that's really consistent.
It would seem that there is no difference, for each is directly arisen from inanimate matter and indirectly from conscious effort. Perhaps, in the case of the tabor, the player slaps the hand directly against the drum skin, whereas in the case of a gong, the player uses an inanimate instrument to hit the playing surface.
But what about if I go like that?
Still, in both cases, the sound is produced directly from inanimate matter. And this, he cites Gendun Drupa's commentary on Vasubandhu's Treasury of Knowledge as his source.
Okay, so that means it's produced by inanimate. So when I go like this, it's a sound not produced by consciousness.
No, when you do that, it is a sound conjoined with consciousness. And when you do it with the stick, it is not. According to this, he thinks.
A tabor is not only struck with the hand. You do these scuffing noises that are the sound is partially the hand. It's not just the drum ringing. It's different than pounding on a conga with your boof, boof, boof. There's these slaps, the sliding slaps. And I think that might be different than when you hit the gong.
How about? Anyway, this is interesting, you know, when you really start questioning things. You know, because the examples look great until you start investigating. Okay, so what we're trying to do here is increase our minds that think about things instead of just taking them for granted. Okay, and we may come up with different answers. Okay, so we're still on an unpleasant, inarticulate sound caused by elements conjoined by consciousness. Okay, so like the sound of a fist hitting you. Okay, the hand is conjoined by consciousness. Pleasant, articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Okay, let's think of an example of that. It's pleasant, it expresses a meaning, but it's not caused by elements, but it is caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. So maybe if you say, okay, when you hit the gong indicating that it's time to come, then it's not conjoined with consciousness because it's an interaction between the, what do you call this? The striker and the gong. But it seems kind of conjoined with consciousness because there's a person moving it.
And some people have an arm made of metal.
An artificial limb.
No, it's the same then.
It's the same as if you would have an arm, an artificial arm, you know, and then striking. And you're leading your arm.
Yeah.
It's a consciousness.
Okay, so if I have an artificial arm and I ring the gong with the metal of my arm hitting the gong, is that conjoined with consciousness? It would seem so because you're mind is moving that. Yeah, but then what's the difference between that and the striker? Well, one is glued to your body and the other one's not. But what would happen if I tied this onto my hand? Would it then be conjoined with consciousness? Oh, that's true. Your fingernails aren't conjoined with consciousness. Yeah. So when you make, if you're just doing this with your fingernails, is that conjoined with consciousness or not? Yeah.
I can think of clocks with the chimes. So there's no consciousness.
Oh, pleasant, articulate, caused by elements not conjoined by consciousness. Okay. Yeah, when you set your tablet and it rings in the morning. But what makes it articulate is our mind. Yeah. Otherwise, if it doesn't ring at the time you're going trying to get up, then it's just a sound. Like when you're setting your time for what time you want the gong on your phone or tablet to ring, when you're just selecting it, then it's inarticulate because it doesn't mean the sound doesn't mean anything to you. But when you hear it when you're asleep, then it becomes articulate.
Opening chimes.
Yeah. Pleasant, it's not articulate. The wind chimes. Yeah. Unless you're blowing. Yeah.
Nowadays your phone and your computer can talk to you. Right?
Yeah.
So that's pleasant, maybe pleasant or unpleasant, articulate sound, like Siri telling you, you have mail. Or it's not conjoined with consciousness.
Okay. Yeah, not conjoined with consciousness. That's really something, isn't it? Yeah, then you can have whole conversations with things not conjoined with consciousness. Yeah. Then maybe with artificial intelligence, you know, you can program a machine so that it says everything you want it to say, and then you fall in love with it. Yeah.
What about the striking of a grandfather clock?
Yeah.
Depending on whether you considered
it pleasant or not. Mm-hmm. It's articulate, and how many rings tells you the hour.
Yeah, it tells you. It's articulate, tells you. It rings 6 times at 6 o'clock. caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. And generally, grandfather clocks, grandmother clocks too, are pleasant sounds. Yeah. Okay, that's a good example. Yeah.
Once here as a discussion, I don't know, a year ago or something, that computers, it's similar to what Raymond Domshu mentioned, that they make sounds when you use them, pleasant sounds with intention, so that the user's self get triggered and you are eager to use it even more because the computer is giving you a positive feedback.
Yeah. I know, but I don't consider, you know, the boards that make sound when you type, I consider that unpleasant.
Computer games. Where you have a positive feedback, then positive sound, the gamer, I don't know, yeah. I don't play, but
But you know, when you hit, if you're winning on the computer game, then it plays a sound, that becomes articulate. Yeah. You killed another person, bing! You know, on your computer game. Okay, unpleasant articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Okay, here he's using another thing of technology. What would be one that doesn't have technology? Unpleasant articulate caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness.
Sound of the magma from the volcano covering your house.
Is that, that's not articulate.
Oh, no, you're right, it's not.
Yeah. Hmm. Huh? A car horn, unpleasant, articulate, caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Okay. Yeah, it's the same thing of the person, but that's like this. Oh, okay. Unpleasant, articulate, caused by elements not conjoined, but you know, but the same thing. We turn on the car alarm. No, when you lock your car, then you turn on the alarm.
It just turns on.
Huh?
You just armed it. You didn't set the alarm off.
Yeah, but it had something to do with your doing something. Okay, unpleasant, articulate. Okay, caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness, a fire alarm. Yeah, that thing that goes off at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're asleep.
Your smoke alarm.
Yeah, your smoke alarm. That, yeah, that's definitely unpleasant. And it's not conveying any meaning. Because there's no smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, it means your battery's dead. So, so pleasant inarticulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Okay, here's, we have the sound of a gong or the sound of a drum.
Sound of wind.
Pleasant inarticulate. Yeah, like the sound of a breeze.
The trees. Yeah. Leaves rustling.
Chimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Chimes. Wind chimes. Unpleasant inarticulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined by consciousness. Like the roar of a tornado. Does a tornado roar?
Yes.
It roars? Mm-hmm. Or the sound of a house falling down.
How about the sound of leaking water in your home or cave? Filling your home and cave with water.
Okay. So you can generate the definitions of any of these eight by substituting object of hearing for sound. Thus, the definition of a pleasant articulate sound caused by elements conjoined with consciousness would be a pleasant articulate object of hearing caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Now, what about when you have ringing in your ears? That's conjoined with consciousness. It's not articulate and it's unpleasant, right? So that would be unpleasant, inarticulate sounds caused by elements not, no, conjoined with consciousness.
Why is it
conjoined? Well, it's not coming from outside. It's a defect in your ears. But on the other hand, nobody's causing it. Nobody's consciously causing it. Yeah? So, but what would the sound of your stomach growling when you're hungry be? Unpleasant?
Inarticulate.
Inarticulate, or is it articulate? Is it telling you you need to eat? Is it telling you you're hungry? It's telling you you're hungry. So it's unpleasant, articulate. Is that, it's got to be conjoined by consciousness. Yeah, because your body's making it.
And there's also some, because it's often a stress symptom too, right? So the body is telling, is having an over stimulus, isn't it?
When you have ringing in your ears? Mm-hmm. I don't know what causes ringing in your ears. Huh?
That's the label.
But it can
look
like
pressure.
They can't figure it out.
Your ear disorder.
Yeah, it's an ear disorder. So it's coming from your body, and your body's conjoined with consciousness. But there's no motivation. There's no intention. So does conjoined with consciousness mean there has to be an intention? Seems like not, because, you know, the sound of, you know, it, you can make a beautiful sound without any intention. Yeah, or a horrible sound. You know, somebody trips and goes kaboom. Yeah. So that would be unpleasant, inarticulate sound caused by elements conjoined with consciousness. Because that would be like the sound of a fist hitting you. But the sound of a fist hitting you, isn't that articulate too?
No.
Isn't it expressing a meaning?
No.
No?
I think with conveying meaning is different than we can read meaning out of it. It, like, it's purposely expressing meaning rather than just we can decipher a meaning from it. And so I think that we have to look at articulate, whether we're stretching it when we say even that your stomach is, that noise your stomach's making is articulate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But, and also with the conjoined with consciousness.
Uh-huh.
If it's an element that has consciousness, I don't think it has to be consciously made noise.
Mm-hmm.
Like falling down, like you said.
Yeah. So if you fall down, is that a sound? If you fall down and hit the floor, is that a sound made by your body or made by the floor? So is it conjoined with consciousness or not?
Can reveal meaning. We understand that somebody fall down.
Yeah. But again, we understand that. So it does have some meaning. But does it have an intentional meaning? Yeah. But then, if it has to have an intention to be articulate, then why would a pleasant articulate sound caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness, like a sound recording of a person teaching compassion, because the recording has no intention to be articulate. But he's putting it under articulate.
And some of these we're forgetting that we're talking about sound, like the sound of the fist.
Uh-huh.
The sound itself isn't articulate. The person who threw the punch had some meaning. But the sound of it hitting you, I think we're going away from the sound too much.
Okay, but I'm still that, yeah. Okay, then how, you know, the sound of pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. I'm still stuck on this recording bit. Yeah? How can that be articulate?
Conveying the teaching.
No, but what is making the sound is the machine.
It makes it not conjoined with consciousness, but it doesn't relate to the articulate.
So you can have a sound, but then doesn't articulate need intention? Isn't that what we were saying before? To be articulate, doesn't it need intention, and the machine doesn't have
How about that. It's the to be articulate would depend on the receiver of the sound, not the maker necessarily, the person hearing it.
Yeah, but he was saying before, even if you hear something from another language, what was he saying? It can express meaning to you. What we're getting at, I don't know if you, what we're getting at is that articulate is, has, we don't know exactly what the definition of articulate means. Or what the definition of caused by elements conjoined or not conjoined with consciousness, exactly what it means. So he's given us a definition, but the definition's too broad, you know, because we can't really isolate, is it this or is it that? Venerable Nima?
Yeah, I was just going to go back to the definition that says any sound that indicates or the reveals meaning. So the articular part in that example refers to the fact that when we hear the teaching, even if it's through a medium of technology, that we're still deriving meaning from it. So that makes it articulate because it complies with this definition.
What was the first part of the definition?
That sound that indicates meaning or reveals meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the definition of articulate. So it's a sound that expresses something, conveys something.
Yeah. So then wouldn't the sound of your stomach growling when you're hungry be articulate? Yeah.
It would seem so, because it reveals that you're hungry and people understand that as being hungry.
Being hungry.
It would seem that all sounds are articulate because they indicate something is happening. Therefore, there's a meaning.
That's true. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's what they mean here.
It couldn't mean that. Yeah, because then, the sound of a rock falling, then that would be articulate because it reveals the meaning that a rock fell. Yes. Meaning is what?
It is in the eye of the
beholder. Oh, the eye of the
beholder. What's not clear is what's the meaning of meaning.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a very good example of how really to communicate with people, we have to be quite specific. Otherwise, we come to very different conclusions. Shall we go on to odors? Are you ready? Maybe smell. Smell is a better word than odor, don't you think? Yeah. The word odor, what is it? You know, does the word odor convey to you something that the word smell does not? Or fragrance? The third type of five types of external forms is odor. The definition of an odor source or a source that is an odor is an object experienced by a nose consciousness. I think it's better to say by an olfactory consciousness. How can you have a nose that's a consciousness? You know, that's how they define all of them, but it seems a very strange way to translate. Okay, there are several ways to divide smells, but for our or odors. Okay, we'll use odors. Then that way you won't laugh. But for our purpose, the following division into four is good. Fragrant natural odors, like the odor of sandalwood or a fresh mint. Okay. Unfragrant natural odors, like the odor of decaying flesh. Fragrant manufactured odors, like the odor of fresh bread. That's not naturally coming from the bread. Unfragrant manufactured odors, like the odor of formaldehyde.
What does it mean?
Fragrant, nice smelling.
Nice smelling. Could, for some people, number two, decaying flesh could be a nice smell as well, like an animal.
Yeah, that's true. For a vulture. Yeah, it could be. Decaying flesh could be a fragrant natural odor.
I love the smell of durian.
Yeah. Oh! So that's an unfragrant natural odor. Do they have durian perfume or something?
Oh.
No, I see. Then you could bring it back and then they could see what it's really like. Then they'll agree with me. A fragrant odor is one that is pleasing to you, and an unfragrant one is one that is other than a pleasing odor. What about a neutral odor? That is an unpleasant one or a neutral one. Okay. That's one that's unfragrant. Okay. Though we may argue about what is pleasant and what is unpleasant from the point of view of an individual at one time, these four are probably mutually exclusive. But you have to pick a particular moment in time. And the next moment, it may be different. Okay. So what about the sound of your telephone ringing? So we go back to sounds. Is that articulate or not articulate? According to Venerable Tarpa, it's not articulate. It's just the sound.
A person who didn't know what phones were, mm-hmm. It might be inarticulate to you. But if you're a person who knows what a phone is, then I would say it would be articulate.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to do with the ring or the sound. It has to do with the beholder of it.
And
that's my point.
Okay. Let's go on to tastes. Okay, we're really stuck on sounds here. Okay, the fourth type of external form is taste, which is defined as an object experienced by a tongue consciousness. Tongue consciousness? How about gustatory consciousness? Tastes are divided into six types. See if you agree. Sweet, like the taste of sugar, honey, or molasses. Sour, like the taste of vinegar, lemon, or yogurt. Not all yogurt is sour. Bitter, like the taste of coffee. Celery or spinach. Celery and spinach aren't bitter. Astringent, like the taste of persimmons. Green beans? They're not astringent. And unripe bananas. Pungent, hot, spicy, like the taste of red pepper or black pepper. Salty, like the taste of salt or soy sauce. What did they say? Do you remember from fourth grade when you learned these, what the divisions of tastes were? I think sweet, sour, salty, and bitter.
Yeah.
I think there were just four. So this has astringent and pungent. Is spicy, like pepper, is that actually a taste? Or is that a tactile sensation? For me, chili or pepper, actually chili especially, is a tactile sensation, not a taste.
Burning.
Yeah, it's a sensation of burning. Okay, tangible objects, chili. The fifth and final group of external forms are tangible objects. A tangible object is defined as an object experienced by a body consciousness or an object felt by a body consciousness. See, body consciousness, just it's a weird terminology. Tactile consciousness. Tangible objects are divided into two types. Tangible objects that are elements and tangible objects that are arisen or derivative from the elements. The elements are earth, water, fire, and wind. These four are the bases and causes for all matter, visible objects, sounds, odors, and tastes, as well as the other tangible objects. Based on a passage from Vasubandhu's Treasury of Knowledge, Buddhists list just seven tangible objects that are arisen from the elements. Thus, together with the four elements, there are 11 tangible objects. So earth, water, fire, wind, yeah, which we're actually talking about qualities, you know, not things that you can, well, yeah, qualities. And then tangible objects that arisen or derivative from the elements, smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, cold, hunger, thirst. But heat isn't arisen from the elements? Well, heat's one of the elements. It's the fire element, isn't it? Okay. What about bumpiness? Is that roughness? Or what? Yeah. Any other tangible objects you think need to be added in here or subtracted? Oh, yeah, what about pain? Well, pain would go under the feeling aggregate. But wouldn't you have to have a physical sensation that would cause the pain? So if pain is in the feeling aggregate, yeah, when you stub your toe, what is the actual tangible object that you're feeling? It's not smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness, cold, hunger, or thirst. Yeah. Pressure, would that go under the earth element, hardness? Now, wetness is cohesion. Yeah, if you felt pressure, that would be the earth element, huh? Yeah?
I would say heat, because I've examined pain while meditating, and it's, I always feel like it's heat.
Heat?
Once I subtract the negative feeling from it, it seems like it's heat.
It's heat. What about other people? Is your pain the physical sensation of heat? Some people, somebody says yes. Anyway, interesting to look and observe. So if you're experiencing pain because your foot's stuck in the snow, you're experiencing heat?
It feels that way. That's why they call it frostbite. Or,
because the sensation is hot.
It does. You start to get a hot sensation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true in frostbite. Yeah, because they say some of the people, like climbing on Everest, you know, sometimes get this sensation of just being terribly hot, and then they start taking off all their clothes and they wind up freezing to death. Yeah.
Some of the pain is also pressure.
Yeah, but wouldn't pressure be the earth element, hardness? What about when you have an electric shock? What is that? Which of these sensations? Wind?
The pain is the electrical impulses, the nerves.
Yeah. 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 But here we're talking about the tangible objects, and they don't have ideas of receptors. See, this is what I mean about what would it look like if we redid it that corresponded with our present knowledge.
They have different kinds of receptors and they're sensitive to different stimuli.
Yeah.
And they have different names.
Right. But electric? An electric shock? I don't know. Yeah.
But pain is a mental experience, so it couldn't be a...
The pain is in the feeling aggregate.
Right.
But then there's a physical sensation that is, you know, that the pain accompanies. So I'm asking what that physical sensation is. Yeah, like if you get an electric shock, is that the wind element? Is that what you're experiencing is the wind element? Or the fire element? Or is it something that's not listed here? Okay, anyway, think about it.
They don't list sharp either. You feel something sharp.
Yeah. Sharp. What about when you poke yourself with a needle? Or you're getting, you know, you're getting a vaccine or they're putting that hardness, sharpness, hardness. Yeah, probably earth element. Certainly the four elements in this ancient system, earth, water, fire, and wind, do not correspond at all with what we in the modern era think of as elements. All of us who have had any exposure to science think of all this matter, our bodies and all the rest that surrounds us, as built up out of the elements. Both the ancient and modern systems agree that matter is atomically established. But the ideas are quite different. Also, science and the Sutra school, the Satantrika's following reasoning, agree that atoms, too, may be deconstructed into smaller parts still. Although earth, water, fire, and wind are hardly the same as hydrogen, helium, carbon, and so forth, the point is that all matter is constructed out of the elements. So we would agree with that no matter what the elements were, you know, that all matter is constructed out of elements. In the Buddhist way of thinking, elements do not occur in strictly irreducible units, but exist as potencies within physical particles. So that's interesting. You have the physical particle, and the elements are potencies within the physical particle. Then what are the physical particles themselves of these different tangible objects? If there's a difference between the potencies that exist in them and the actual particles. Yeah, each atom is an aggregate of at least eight components: earth, water, fire, wind, visible form, odor, taste, and tangibility arisen from the elements. I don't think you can say each atom is an aggregate, because each atom by itself doesn't have visible form. Or it has maybe the potency for it, but it's an atom alone wouldn't have any of those derivatives. Also, if sound is present, in addition to these eight, which exist in all material phenomena, sound is there as a ninth potency. Okay, what does this footnote say? Footnote says, Gendun Drupa explains that in the desire realm, which is where all humans live, an atom located in a place where a sense power and sound are not present is composed of eight particle substances. However, if it is located in a place where a body sense power is present, there are nine, the ninth being the body sense power. If, in addition to that, the atom is in a place where the eye, ear, nose, our tongue sense power is located, then there are 10 particle substances, the 10th being the potency of that sense power. And if it is in a place where there is also sound, there are 11, the 11th being sound. Thus, if an atom is in a place where there are none of the sense powers and sound is present, then sound is the 9th particle substance. Okay? I don't understand that. Anybody understand that?
I think it's really confusing that he's using atom when this is what they're talking about from the particles from one of the lower school systems, I don't know which, but just to even call it an atom confuses our mind and makes us try to make it into something atomically explainable according to the science as we understand it. What he's talking about is partless particles, right?
Not or necessarily partless.
But particles, all the same.
Yeah.
So,
but an atom is a particle.
But their whole idea of it was different.
Yeah. Very different.
Yeah. So, and this aggregation of all these elements and la 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 la, that was just a part of their, you know, their fundamental basis of all phenomenon understanding.
Yeah, I've never understood this, you know, in all these years. Yeah. I've never understood it well, I should say.
I was shocked to learn this in the last year. They can see atoms now with electron microscopes.
But that's indirectly.
Yeah, but
so
it's
you're
how
not
small,
seeing the atom.
It's how small they can see.
You're not seeing the atom. You're seeing a reproductive image of an enlarged atom.
Yeah, something. But that's how small they can go now to the...
Yeah. But you can't say you're seeing an atom. Yeah? Just like when you see a photograph, we say, oh, that's Mary. But we're not seeing Mary. We're seeing a photograph of Mary. But it's interesting in our regular language. Yeah. Like we say, who's that? You know, oh, that's the Dalai Lama. No, actually, it's a drawing of His Holiness. Yeah?
But if you're seeing someone through a pair of glasses, is that a direct?
Very good question. And what about if your glasses make your vision better? Yeah.
Hopefully they do.
Yes, hopefully they do. It would seem to be direct.
So the microscope might be enhancing your vision in a sense to see the atom.
No, I think you're... Oh, that's it. Okay. So if you have... Well, if you have bad eyes and you're seeing something that regular people, it looks normal size, but you're seeing it as small, very small, and you can't read it, would that be a reliable cognizer or not? Yeah. Not reliable. Then if you got glasses, would that be a reliable cognizer? Probably yes. But by artificial means. Yeah.
In terms of seeing atoms, they are like the Hadron Collider where they collide the atoms and the particles, and they observed some particles and they can infer that the particles are there because of their signature, electric signature, or because they displace other particles and on the effect that they have on the particles around them. So is that an inferential cognizer?
Yeah. That seems pretty inferential, doesn't it? Yeah, you're inferring the existence of atoms. Small particles. Okay, thus like the others, sound too is materially established, but not in the same sense that other forms are. Also, sound has an extremely short duration. Is that where we are? Yeah. Thus, in their way of thinking, in their way of thinking, the four elements provide the basis for all material phenomena. All the rest of matter, visible forms, sounds, odors, touch, tastes, and other tangible objects such as smoothness are arisen from the elements. Although I have never seen it done this way, it seems that it would be suitable to divide all matter into the same two groups as tangible objects are divided into, the elements and what is arisen from the elements. Okay, keep in mind that the elements are tangible objects, objects of experience of the body consciousness only. Indeed, we can see fire, or at least what that is what we normally say. To be more precise, we see the color and shape of fire, because colors and shapes are all the eye consciousness may perceive. In the same way, we don't smell fire, but we smell the odor of fire. But we can feel fire, and it is shown by the presence of heat. The element of fire has the nature of heat, so wherever there is heat, there is fire. It does not have to be a blazing fire, thank goodness. The warmth in your hot coffee indicates the presence of the fire element there. It may strike you as odd that cold is arisen from the elements, but heat is not. But any measure of heat that you can feel is the fire element. So cold is a relative absence of that element. Science speaks of cold in that way too. It is not that the fire element has become absent within the matter that feels cold. It is that it is no longer dominant. So in all these different things we experience, you have the four elements and the derivatives, but how you experience it depends on what's dominant and what's not. Okay? So like even, a swimming pool has the elements of heat and hardness and those kinds of things. Okay. And in an Indian-based philosophy, very often definitions are given in terms of the nature and the function of phenomena. The definitions of the four elements are all like that. The definition of earth is that which is hard and obstructive. Okay, so there you can see that's a quality that is in, it's a potency or a quality in a physical particle. It still doesn't answer the question of what the particle is. Okay, the nature of earth is hardness, and its function is to obstruct things. The earth element is manifest as stability or as a basis. The predominance of the earth element in a stone is shown by its stability. However, all material phenomena are constructive of aggregate particles that do not consist of just one element alone, but are composites of at least eight potencies. Okay, here it's saying that the particles are the composite of the potencies. So that would mean that the particles are designated independence on the collection of the potencies. But they say they're substantially existent. Okay, anyway. All material phenomena are constructive of aggregate particles that do not consist of just one element alone, but are composites of at least eight potencies, including all four of the elements. Thus, the elements are always together and never separated. Indeed, even in a rock, the elements of water, fire, and even wind do exist as characteristics of a stone, but the stability of the earth element is manifest predominantly. More broadly, this means that physical stability is a sign of the presence of the earth element. Even in a fire, for instance, as seen by the way ashes will dance on the licks of flame. That's a sign. This means that physical stability is a sign of the presence of the earth element. Okay, even in a fire, for instance, as seen by the way ashes will dance on the licks of flame. So ashes, yes, are the earth element, but they're a completely different thing than fire. Anybody understand this? I can see everybody is super interested in this topic. Maybe I'll keep reading and we'll finish it, huh? Wherever there is physical stability, there is the earth element. Greater or lesser stability indicates greater or lesser manifestation of the earth element. I would think ashes dancing on the licks of flame would indicate the wind element.
But the tangibility.
It's not fire. Anyway, we know the presence of water by the sign of wetness, and we see the effects of water in the sign of things getting moist. So the definition of water is that which is wet and moistening. The nature of water is wetness, and its function is to moisten things. But it usually says the function of wetness is of water is cohesion. Oh, that's the next sentence, isn't it? The water element is manifest as cohesiveness. For example, a wet cloth will pick up dirt better than a dry one because the dirt sticks to it. The adherence of dirt to moisture indicates the presence of the water element that manifests as cohesiveness. Still, ordinary water is not the water element separate from the remaining elements, for the other elements also exist in water. For instance, in a single drop of water shows greater resistance to one's finger than the same amount would show as internal fluid in a greater volume of water. In this system of Buddhist physics, the ability of water to form drops and its stability in that form indicate the presence of the earth element in water. Also, ordinary water shows the presence of the earth element in it because water is obstructive. If you drop into water from high enough, it is like hitting concrete, like when you dive and you land on your back. It hurts. Now we can see, you know, our friend Nicole is teaching physics in the nunnery, and people have grown up learning this as physics. She has quite a job. Yeah, introducing a whole new system.
Dealing with the reverse.
Yeah, because we can see. It seems that the presence of fire in all matter is suggested by the power of friction. Even cold water rushing against your skin rapidly enough will feel warm. Does it? The friction of wind against matter produces heat. I don't know, I feel cold when there's strong wind. The definition of fire is that which is hot and burning. The nature of fire is heat, and its function is to burn things. To us moderns, the most difficult element to fathom is wind. Wind is defined as that which is light and moving. The nature of wind is lightness, and its function is to move things. Wind is shown by movement. Any sign of movement shows the presence of the wind element. Wherever there is wind, there is movement, and wherever there is movement, there is wind. When we see the trees swaying and the leaves blowing, we know the wind is up. But even within our bodies, all movement from digestion to walking to speech is due to the presence of the wind element in our bodies. So the wind element is subtle, not coarse. When the wind blows the leaves, the wind element is strongly manifest, but the wind support for those leaves shows the earth element in that breeze. And landslides show the presence of the wind element in the earth. Okay, we finished that. There's still more to come. How much more until we finish the physics lesson? Oh, not too much longer, but we'll do that next week because you are all definitely not interested.
Yeah.
Okay. So, any questions? Besides, do we really have to learn this?
Just a comment, Venerable Children, for the sound section. I think it might help us if we can actually come up with examples for 5 and 6 that are not recordings. Like, what did people think of in ancient times? We haven't thought of those yet.
We did that. I asked that question, though.
But we didn't answer it.
Oh, I think we did, didn't we? For numbers 5 and 6, we're back to sound. We're stuck on pleasant articulate sounds caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Is that, that could be the sound of chimes waking you up in the morning when your phone or your tablet rings. Pleasant. Yeah. Oh, that's
looking
true.
For examples from
Okay.
That might help us with this.
Okay. So, what's a pleasant articulate sound caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness? You know, we had the chimes. They had wind chimes in ancient times, didn't they?
How about the sound of a healthy water buffalo? You know, I mean,
that's conjoined with consciousness.
Maybe if we could look into a different text that.
Yeah. About the sound of the wind teaching the Dharma in the Pure Land.
Pleasant articulate sound caused by elements not conjoined with consciousness. Okay, that's pleasant. Well, it's not articulate.
It means you're going to have water.
No. What's pleasant and articulate, but not caused by consciousness? Yeah? I mean, wind chimes. They must have had those. And, no, those aren't articulate.
Well, isn't it conveying the meaning of wind? I mean, depending on the context.
That's stretching it a bit. I thought we came up with something.
I was just going to say the traditional examples that I see in meditation on emptiness or in Paul Hackett's terms are all, you know, sutra arising in dependence on wind rustling a tree or sound of harsh words spoken by emanated person or words of scolding from a tree rustled by a Buddha's extraordinary powers. May we never hear those.
Okay. But some of those were conjoined by consciousness. Yeah. That's interesting, yeah, that the usual types are quite extraordinary. Yeah.
I was wondered the way the elements are described and the way we think of it in modern days, does it seems to influence the way I think about health and illness.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I think in terms of the elements, it feels like I understand it differently if I'm not feeling well. And if I think of the Western way of describing, you know, some function, then, you know, then it's confusing for me sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, because sometimes if you think in terms of the four elements, an illness is an imbalance of those elements, that can kind of make sense to you, whereas the Western way of describing it would not make sense, or vice versa. The Western way could make a lot of sense, and then the idea of the four elements being imbalanced could be quite puzzling. It probably depends on which medical system you grow up learning. And then you go back and forth between them, yeah. Either one of them, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like everything comes back to definition, and like you were saying before, these definitions are too broad. And in order to come to a conclusion, like they have to be narrowed, especially with modern day, you know, like with me studying Chinese medicine now versus Western medicine, it's a completely different way. You know, with the tinnitus, it could be consciousness affecting that, but depending on, you know, if you look from a Western biomedical perspective, it could have nothing to do with consciousness. So it's like narrowing these definitions is extremely important.
So tendinitis from a viewpoint of Chinese medicine could be have something to do with consciousness.
Yeah, cause, yeah, through like emotions affect particular organ systems and energy pathways. And it, so like tinnitus comes from the kidneys usually. And a lot of it, it could be also the liver could affect the kidney, which could be an emotional consciousness affecting it. So indirectly, it could be the consciousness.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, because in medicine like that, there's you see the relationship between consciousness and the body much more clearly.